Good afternoon, everybody. This is Robin Ayoub from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another recording. With this recording, we're recording episode 241 today, and it's Friday. Happy Friday to all, and if whatever you are, I hope you're having a good weather. In Canada, it's stormy. It's been stormy for a few days, and today the wind is up, and we had a dump of water a couple of days ago. It soaked everything, but we haven't had summer yet. We're still trying to figure out where summer is. We're looking for it. If you have a know about where summer is for Canadian, please let us know. And today, June 19th, 2026, today we have a very special guest with me. Rachel Pierre is the founder and CEO of Parler, based in Austin, Texas. And she is native French speaker, born and raised in Haiti, who spent more than 15 years in computer engineering and program management inside fintech. And funny, we were talking about fintech yesterday. We recorded a very interesting episode we'll publish later on next week about fintech. And she spent time including companies such as JP Morgan Chase, and where she built her PMO, that's the Project Management Office Governance and Digital Advisory Program, and also turned into a regulatory and operational complexity into a measurable business outcome. A lot of people struggle in that area, right? So when we are talking about how do we take operational complexities and turn it around into more of a measurable business outcome, a lot of people, specifically around small to medium business companies, they struggle with that. Larger companies will have broader infrastructure to put these things in place. They've got a lot more resources, technical skills, etc. But you're building a company as a startup or a small entrepreneur, or you know, even medium size nowadays, they probably don't have all the checks and balances in place. And this has got to be an interesting conversation for those individuals. Without going too deep into your bio, Rachel, which I can read it all, but I don't want to at this point. I don't want to take away from your thunder here. I want to leave this opportunity for you to introduce yourself. But before we get started, I want to welcome everybody to the conversation, welcome the audience to the conversation. Hopefully they enjoy this conversation as much as I'm anticipating it. So I look forward to hearing from you guys. Send your comments post-editing this podcast and post-publishing this podcast. We'll look forward to hearing from you. Rachel, welcome to the conversation.
Thanks, Robin. Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here. I'm excited for this conversation.
Thank you. As we say on this channel, if you don't mind, Rachel, the first question is the easy one, and they're all easy. Don't worry. I'm not setting you up for a complex question. This is just the first question to get us going. Everybody's got a story. Mm-hmm. And my, you know, 241 episodes, what I've learned, everybody's got an interesting story.
Nice.
You know, we might think it's not that interesting, but everybody's got an interesting story. If you don't mind, what is your story? What got you here?
Yeah. So as you mentioned, I was born and raised in Haiti. You know, I'm the daughter of a very ambitious man, you know, who went from teacher to lawyer to DA to judge. You know, he was the youngest judge in the court of law of you know, back home. And so at a certain point, he noticed my passion for computer engineering, and he said, okay, you're going to the States for college. And I tried to reason with him, you know, knowing that, you know, appealing to his logic would probably win me the conversation. And so I said, you know, Daddy, doesn't it make sense for me to learn a language that relies so heavily on French only to deform the words? So why don't you just send me to France, right? And an argument that I get a lot from people is that, yeah, but you speak Haitian French, not French French, right? And it's a valid question because, yes, the majority of the population speaks Creole. There's no such thing as Haitian French. They either speak Creole or they speak French or they speak both. And so I do speak proper French. And so I said, Dad, just send me to France. Why do I need to learn a new language? And so he pulled the dad card on me. One day I come home and I'm excited to catch up on what I called back then Le Feu de l'amour, which is French for the young and the restless. It's not a literal translation, but that's what it was called. And I turn on the TV and the show is in English. So I'm like, I'm panicking. I'm flipping the channels. I'm like, Dad, there's something wrong with the cable. And, you know, he goes, no, there's nothing wrong with the cable. I told you, you need to learn English. You now only have a year left and you need to be, you know, like you're going to the States. What are you going to do? So now you have no choice but to learn it. And sure enough, I mean, I learned it that way. He immersed me in the language just by having me watch my favorite TV shows, which was very painful at first because I was so focused on the subtitles, I couldn't really focus on the images. So I felt like I wasn't really getting the gist of things yet. So it was painful at first, but I got it, right? Because my world, I started living in an English world. So I got an English immersion within the Haitian society. But sure enough, a year later, I came to the States. You know, I went for computer engineering, secured a job offer 6 months before graduating at Broadridge Financial, you know, Solutions, then went on to lead initiatives at JP Morgan Chase and Apple. So just to say that, you know, there are different ways to learn a language. It doesn't have to be traditional. It doesn't have to be going to school, taking classes, especially for basic professionals. And that's really how my business started, is just by watching, you know, throughout my career, I would watch affluent people buying their access to rooms that they couldn't fully participate in just because they lacked the culture. They couldn't understand the cultural nuances. And, you know, they felt like they didn't belong. And so, yeah, so that's how Parlay started. And that's also a bit of my background in a nutshell.
And so this is what your background is. So tell us about what you're doing right now.
So I used to work at Apple. I actually just exited corporate last Friday and I'm super excited about it. But I used to lead Apple Cash initiatives. So now, for example, people can schedule their payments, their rent payments, for example, right? College buddies. Or, you know, young people can schedule their rent payments, can split the bill, or even parents can, you know, schedule allowances for their kids using Apple Cash so the kid doesn't have to like bug them every so often. Dad, you forgot to send me my allowance. And so, you know, I'm very proud of that product. I'm very proud of Apple Cash. And I decided, you know, I reached a point in my life where I wanted to focus on me and my talent and my skill sets and reap the benefits myself. And so, yeah, as of last Friday, I exited corporate and I'm excited. I know it's nerve-wracking for a lot of people. I actually haven't even told many people in my family yet because I know that they will transfer their anxiety onto me. But right now I'm just doing Parlay full-time. Right now I just coach, you know, affluent people or executives who want to maintain their executive presence and their authority when the language switches to French. That's what I do now.
Excellent. And have you been doing this for a while, Rachel, the Parlay, or no?
So Parlay officially launched in January. So it's only been 6 months. However, I have coached people before officially launching my own business.
And, you know, you reminded me because in November, I exited a corporate job back in November,
nice.
2025.
All right.
And when you, it's sort of like when you exit, it's mixed emotion. Part of me wants to jump up and down and say, you know, thank you. And the other part probably thinking, you know, I've spent a lot of time and a lot of years building something, although it's not for me personally, but I helped build something. Mm-hmm. I'm sure the people that they build buildings and bridges, et cetera, they're not going to say, well, it's my bridge. But they look at it with pride and they would say, I helped build that bridge.
Very true.
And so in a corporate world, even though you're not directly, you know, owning the company or owning anything and the profit is not coming to you, it directly comes to you in the form of a paycheck.
Right.
The idea is that when we leave corporate, sometimes it feels like a bit of a sadness, to be honest with you.
Yes.
And not because I'm, you know, afraid of the future or, oh my God, I don't know what's going to happen. That's not the case at all. It just feels to me like I'm leaving something that I've worked on for many, many years. Like, I mean, my last job I worked on for like almost 25 years.
Wow.
So it's, you know, I can see how, you know, the mixed emotion comes to play, right?
Yes. Yes. You know, leaving something that, you know, leaving something that you've built for 25, that means you could have a 25-year-old adult, you know, from baby to adulthood and watch them grow and, you know, work on them, raise them, you know, into the person they are today. So, yes, you know, it feels like a divorce kind of, right, where you feel sadness. 100%. But, you know, it's for the best because you're moving on to greater, better things. You have other goals for your life. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny you made the comparison with divorce because I thought about that, right? And you know how they say, you know, when couple have like marital problem and they want somebody does something bad and they end up being divorced. And then the subsequent conversation is they say, well, happiness is life lived well, and that's your best revenge. So I feel like, you know, whatever you do in your next step in your life after corporate, it feels like if you're happy, if you're doing yes. well, just happiness inside of you.
Yes.
I think that's the best reward that can come out of this.
I agree, Robin. I agree, because especially for, you know, ambitious professionals like myself, like my dad. My dad raised me to be, you know, like extremely ambitious and talented and driven. And I know that the same is shared across many cultures, Asian cultures, Indian cultures. I hear that repeated a lot, African cultures, where, for example, some kids, you know, have become doctors just because their parents wouldn't take anything less, for example, right? So it's very hard to live in that type of circle and still prioritize internal happiness and still say, you know what? I know this goes against everything that my family believes in, but I'm going to choose internal happiness because that's what matters to me most. So it's certainly not easy. It's not easy, but it is also rewarding, very rewarding. Yeah.
It takes some... You know, everybody knows because I speak about it quite often on this channel, it takes a lot of self-reflection and discovery. Mm-hmm. And you've got to understand as a person, what are your priorities? And, mm-hmm. and we all go through different phases of our lives. You know, the priorities that you earlier in your career are different than the priorities when you're 40. It depends on how old people are and depends, you know, what stage of life they are in. Exactly. And their priority shifts and changes and move along, yes. kind of thing. So you require different things at different stages of your life.
Yes, I agree. I agree, because it is important as a young person in your 20s. Yeah, it is important to have a career to, you know, to be successful. But yes, you reach like your 40s, for example, and you're like, is this truly what I want for the next 20 years of my life? For the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years of my life? Yeah, yeah. So it does take, you know, a lot of reflection for sure.
Now, for the audience, Rachel spent, you know, over a decade building governance and compliance systems inside fintech. I guess the question here would be is, was there an actual moment where specific meeting or triggers where you realized your real expertise was less about the system and more about how people are performing inside of those systems?
100%. I love this question, because I did find myself in many rooms where I feel like my emotional intelligence was greater. And so I really had to kind of reduce or minimize my talent and my skill sets in order to fit the room that I was in. And I just wasn't comfortable doing that any longer, because it takes more than just technical skills to succeed, right? Especially in certain careers. And yeah, that was my observations. I was in many rooms where I literally had to shrink in order to make things happen or make others comfortable. And yeah, I decided I was no longer, I decided 2 years ago that I was no longer comfortable doing that. So it took me 2 years of self-reflection to say, okay, I'm done with corporate. Yeah.
Are you done with corporate? And you know what? There are some people who, like, they go into the corporate world and they retire from the corporate world and they seem to be enjoying, you know, the, what I call the guardrails that corporate puts around your creativity, your ambition, your thinking.
That's right.
Because, you know, I very seldomly hear people say, you know, you come to work for us and you can do whatever you want. Well, no.
Exactly.
There are corporations, there are guardrails, there are systems that you have to fit in. And for those of us who are individuals out there, that there are free thinkers, creative people, people want to do more than what corporate can offer them. Mm-hmm. That becomes like, you know, and I made this comparison earlier in my career. It's like you live in a neighborhood where the speed limit is 50 kilometers an hour, and you go by yourself Porsche or a Lamborghini or one of those fast cars, and you hardly take that car off the first gear.
Yes.
You just can't do it.
That's a great analogy. That is such a good analogy. I've never thought of it, but that's so good, Robin. That is so true. Yeah. And I've had... You know, I had a mentor, you know, I reached out to her once and I shared this with her. I said, I feel like my creativity, I feel so restrained. Like, what can I do? And she said, you know, I want you to go to the head of your department and tell him, what can I take off your plate? Because I'm bored and I have talent that you're not tapping into, you know. Can I do this for you? Can I do that for you? And I did, you know, I did, because I love Apple. Apple is a great company. And I love the products I worked on, but I feel like there was so much more that I could be doing, you know. But yes, like you said, there are guardrails and they're not going to customize, you know, a certain product line just for Rachel. You know, I'm not Steve Jobs at the end of the day. So, yeah.
But you know what? A lot of corporations are missing out. on this type of creativity, this type of productivity that could be harnessed to push a large organization. One time I was in a board meeting and I was asking a CEO of a almost $700 million company the question. Actually, he was asking the question. I'm the managing director of a certain region, Canada. And he was asking, like, you know, how come you guys are growing at a faster rate than the rest of the regions? And, you know, my immediate answer to him was, we have a system where it allows us to shortcut the decision-making process from, you know, to very minimal. Like we operating almost like an entrepreneur. We don't have to go back to head office every time, et cetera. So we do what we need to do, manage the business, make sure that we're taking care of business, and it allows us to think. In fact, that particular point was later on illustrated by saying we're going to decentralize. A lot of companies decentralize the decision-making process down to a division level or to a geographical level, because that centralization idea was, and it still is, a huge stumbling block in driving ideas forward and driving speed and decision-making process forward. And it's impacting the growth of many companies.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I mean, when you have that centralized process, you lack perspectives, you lack, it does become a roadblock. It does become a roadblock to progress, especially, you know, in the times that we live in today, where you get an influx of perspective that actually can help you cater to a trending market. So when you're not taking that into consideration, you're really, you're blocking yourself from growth because you're not catering to the current market or at the speed that the market is changing. You're not, you become irrelevant. You're not catching on with the relevance, with the times. And so I agree. Yeah.
Now, one of your core theses was that vocabulary or grammar competence, it's not what fails normally. It's not like the bigger issue here. Yes. It is the authority and control of high-stake moments, regardless of how confident a person in the language otherwise.
Yeah.
Can you walk me through actually what happened to someone in that moment and how, if they know the words, but they lack the other elements to make them more presence in those types of meetings, what happened and what collapses?
This question, because I see it all the time, Robin, where a leader who's very influential in English-speaking markets arrives in Monaco or Paris, you know, whether it be a business dinner or, you know, an event, and jokes are flying and they feel like the room has moved on without them because they can't catch the joke, even though, you know, they may smile and they may nod because they understand a few words, but they're not catching the nuance, right? And so a lot of people come to me, it's not because they actually lack French vocabulary, they lack context. And so when you don't have context, you cannot actually participate in those conversations. I have a prime example for you. The Air Canada CEO, right? Michael Russo, who is actually stepping down in September at the request of the population because there was an incident at LaGuardia Airport where the pilot from Montreal passed away. I'm sure you've heard the story. And the nation revolted because the CEO only said two words in French. And so I said, you know what? Let me go listen to the speech because how bad could it be? And also, why couldn't he just say at least two sentences in French? And so I listened to the speech and even the word bonjour was so, it sounded so wrong that I understood that he probably was so insecure about his French that he decided, okay, I'm just going to stick to the language that I'm powerful in, which is English. But it's also good to note that he had taken 300 hours of French over 4 years. And that further validates my point, right? Just taking French is not going to get you anywhere, right? No. Just studying French, the traditional method, because you're not a 10-year-old kid studying a language and trying to memorize it out of context. You are a professional, so you need to learn it within the context. When you lose that context, you lose your authority, you lose your power, you lose your influence. So you just become just this other person in the room, but you know, your title cannot help you because you can't keep up with the conversation. Yeah.
Correct. Now, this particular incident that you mentioned with Air Canada, CEO of Air Canada, that's been a talk of town here for since the incident took place. And I do agree with you. I mean, I find it a bit drastic to ask a CEO to resign, to be honest with you, in this case, maybe, you know, give him feedback or give him some, you know, for the next time kind of thing.
Yes.
But to ask the guy to, after managing the company for so many years, and through difficult times, to mind you, to step down, there must be some other things in there. I have no idea. But to ask somebody to step down over, and sorry, guys, I'm stating my opinion. That's, I don't care what you guys think. But that's my opinion. To ask a CEO of a large company such as Air Canada to step down over a couple of sentences in French, come on. You could be, you know, we don't, that's not the hill we want to die on when it comes to firing a CEO, to be honest with you.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, and a proof of point that you mentioned, that the guy took a few hundred hours in French. Like, if his intention not to learn French, he wouldn't have gone to school.
Right, exactly, exactly. So unfortunately, he didn't know about parler. Had he known about parler, he wouldn't have been in this situation, Robert.
Well, you know what?
Please do. Yes. You know, yes. And then he can, you know, just let the world know, hey, Rachel rescued me. I'm back. She saved my career. Yes.
Absolutely. Is this a French specific problem, or is it true for any other language, or shifting authority across second language in general? Like, would you see this problem show up in specifically for French, or could be Japanese, Korean, Spanish, German, etc.?
Great question. Same thing in Japanese. For example, I have a prime example for you. My mom came to visit me when I was in New York City, and we step into an elevator. There was an Asian person in the elevator. Knowing a bit of Asian culture myself, I didn't say anything. We step in the elevator, you know, I was quiet, but the moment we step out of the elevator, my mom goes, I didn't raise you this way. You stepped into the elevator, you didn't even say bonjour. You didn't greet the person. And she goes, I didn't raise you this way. And I said, okay, mom, when we go back, okay, I want you to say good morning. Hopefully there's a person in the elevator. I want you to say good morning and experience it for yourself. Thank God there was again another Asian person in the elevator when we went back out. And she said, you know, good morning, no response. When we get off the elevator, she goes, oh my God, that person just was so rude. I said, good morning, they didn't respond. I said, mom, you know, in Japanese culture, when you step into such a private space, a small space, it's actually customary to be quiet. Quiet is the respect. Okay. And I understand in your culture, in our Haitian culture, in French culture, you're supposed to say bonjour. That's respectful, right? But it's not a global understanding, mom. It's not a global definition of respect. In some cultures, it's actually the opposite. And so that is true for across many cultures, not just French. And what remains true is that you need to know the language in which you need to understand your environment, the language of your environment. And by language, I don't just mean literally vocabulary and grammar. No, I mean cultural nuance, right? What does respect mean to those people? What would offend them? What kind of behavior would offend them? What kind of behavior would make them feel like appreciative and respectful? So you have to understand the language of your environment, your underness and your audience, right? I hear that a lot from people who go to France and they have this expectation and they make a big investment, right? They buy first class tickets and they pay for these amazing hotels. And then they come back and say, oh my God, Rachel, you know, the French were so rude.
Yeah.
I asked probing questions. I said, talk me through, you know, an example, you know, of your experience. Prime example, they step into an establishment. They don't even say good morning. The hostess, you know, say good morning. They don't even respond. Then when they sit down, they flag a waiter and I'm like,
it's got disaster written all over it.
You were absolutely disrespectful. How can you not greet these people? How do you not know that the first thing you do when you step into an establishment is to say bonjour? How do you not know that? I said, you set yourself up for failure. You didn't make sure that you got a return on your investment for that trip. And so, yeah, you know, short answer to your question, it across cultures, not just French. Yeah.
You know, I've studied French all my life. I went to school studying French, university, you know, all the other things. But and when you leave your environment, like I was born and raised in Beirut, Lebanon.
Okay.
And I came to Canada after many stops, I want to say early 90s, 1998 or something. And I ended up living in English communities in Canada. Although I went to a bilingual community, which is New Brunswick, it's the only bilingual province in the country. The conversation, it's almost like what you were explaining about Creole, for instance. You mix French and Spanish. I'm assuming that's what it is, right?
Creole is, it's very mixed. It's not Spanish, actually, but it's just French and I think African language. But there are some words that are very similar to that sound, you know, that are close to English. For example, when you say me too in Creole, it's when too. So yeah, I don't know the full scope of Creole, even though I speak it and I write it. But there's very little French in it, because if you speak French to someone who only speaks Creole, they will not understand you. They will not understand you. Yeah.
So, but that's what happened to me in New Brunswick, right? So I speak French, and I, you know, I've never been to Canada before. I ended in New Brunswick. Mm-hmm. And I started speaking French, and people were looking at me like, what the heck this guy's saying? And I ended up listening to the conversation in French, and I found out that they speak something called chiac. And chiac in New Brunswick, meaning that they mix the English and the French, and sometimes they throw a few Aboriginal words in there, which I have no idea what they are.
Yeah.
Just to give you an example, and for my New Brunswick colleagues on the East Coast, this is for you guys. So that would be something like, j'ai piché mon tente dans la backyard. So they put them together in a... It works for them, and it works in that environment, which is fine. But for somebody from the outside coming in, first time hearing it, it takes some adjustments. So for me, it was easier for me to learn English versus go back and trying to figure this out.
Absolutely. Where did you study? So you said you studied...
I studied in Beirut,
Beirut, okay. You know, my first couple trips to Canada, I had this problem because people were speaking to me in French, when I was like, I can tell you're speaking French, but I don't understand what you're saying. And that's because at the time I didn't speak English. And, you know, they included a lot of English words in their vocabulary. Like, for example, they'd say, je vais avoir du fun. And I'm like, what? Je vais avoir quoi? Quoi? C'est quoi fun? You know, it's not a French word. And, you know,
I want to have some fun.
Right. I want to have some fun. Yeah. And so I totally understand what you're saying. Yep.
Yeah. Now, is there a physical version for this? Like when you talk about the communication piece, the language piece, is there a physical version for it? Like I'm talking about posture, eye contact, maybe pacing a little bit, or no, just a verbal one?
Absolutely. Because authority, you know, you could step into a room and command authority without ever speaking a word, right? At least not even for the first few seconds. The moment you step into that room, you can command authority and presence without uttering a word. So there is absolutely a physical portion of this, because when the executives and I, we practice their negotiation skills in French, you know, not that they don't have those skills already, but we practice them in French. I pay attention to those cues as well, you know, how to stay engaged, right? What the Francophones interpret as he's disengaged, or like, for example, your tone, right? And understanding silence, that silence doesn't mean that they're non-responsive or that, you know, you're uncomfortable. It's okay to take to pause and to watch the reaction of, you know, your audience, you know. So yeah, there's absolutely a physical component for sure. Just like in the US as well, right? When you go through executive coaching, there is a physical component to that. Yeah.
So I know your method is almost positioned against textbook drills, which is most schools or language schools or app schools or whatever you want to call them. People now study on their apps.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's a drill, right? You have to study something, you got to write something, but from an exam or test or to answer, you know, quizzes. But from your perspective, it's more like, you know, a real world, high-stake environment rather than classroom fluency. And you have something called 90-day executive intensive. Can you walk us through like what one day looked like?
Yes. So day one, for example, we go through your immersion process. I take a download of your routine so that I can customize your roadmap according to your routine, so that you don't feel like you're doing something extra in addition to your already busy schedule. And so I create an immersion for you, leveraging your home environment. I ask you, okay, what do you do after, you know, you take your coffee, or when you step out the door, what's your next stop? And so I create all of that, but in a French version. And then, so that I call that phase survival. That's the first month. And survival, because going back to how I felt when my dad changed the channel on me, and here I was trying to comprehend what was going on, and I'm focused on the subtitles. So you're surviving because there's a neural reset happening. We're telling your brain, you're no longer just operating in English, we're now operating in French and English, right? Then we move on to the second month, which is function. Once you've set that new foundation in your brain, and your brain now understands, okay, we are now bilingual, so you're able to now function. and the just the basics, how to order a croissant and coffee, how to ask for directions, right? And I also focus more on conversations happening in your industry, in your area of interest. And then the third month, we focus strictly on that area of interest. We elevate, you know, your presence in that area of interest. So we go through some key business terms that are leveraged in French and how those could differ from, you know, the same meaning, from the same word in English, for example, because we know that 40% of English is French. And for example, the entire legal system is based on French. And there are a lot of words that are used in the English vocabulary that means something different in French, right? And so we go through that, we go through the terms. And what I do love about that process is that because it's embedded in the person's current environment, there's a higher rate of retention. It's not like a student memorizing vocabulary that he's not even using on a daily basis. And so he just has to memorize it just to pass an exam. And then after the exam, he forgets everything else because it was just for a grade. No, that's not what we're doing. We're doing real life training, right? Real life coaching. And we're leveraging your existing world so that it maximizes retention and you become effective in the new circle that you're trying to gain access into.
So, you know, I've learned English by sucking it from the air kind of thing. I never went to school to learn it. And it's sort of like, yeah. I don't know how I learned it, but you're right. You know, when the channel changed, I love that analogy or that experience that you went through, because I feel like when I landed in Canada, the channel changed. There's no other way around it. I mean, I don't have a small community that speaks French or Arabic around me. So I had to figure out what to do with this new language now called English.
Yeah, you were baptized by fire. You know, it's like they dropped you in the deep end of the pool and you have to figure it out. Yeah.
Sink or swim, Rachel.
Yes, exactly. Sink or swim, yeah.
So you've seen, you know, I mean, in order for people to get well or do well in school or learn a new language, they need to practice.
Yes.
So that tells me if you're focusing on the practice, the individuals that you're working with, they're actually working in that environment or
That's
conducting
right.
business in that environment.
That's exactly
not necessarily right. in and out. You know, I've got a meeting in July, 1 hour, I've got to speak French, help me. It's more intense than that. Am I correct?
You are 100% correct. They already operate in that environment. And so, yeah, you know, like I was saying, the retention is greater because they're already in that environment. And then their counterparts also notice the shift because the person starts understanding more, right? More of the business terms or nuances. And so, you know, they would come back to me and say, hey, my counterpart complimented me today. He said, I understood, you know, the whole conversation, or I understood, you know, at least 50% of the conversation, or that I was able to, you know, contribute, you know, in the meeting in French. And I really love that feedback because, you know, it's a truth. I mean, I know that I'm already a testament that the method works, you know, my dad used it on me and I, you know, I had no choice, but, yeah, that's 100% right. And that's why I love what I do, is because the person's world already, I don't have to, you know, start from scratch. I don't have to invent the wheel. The person's world, the person's day-to-day already creates for us the environment needed for him to practice or for her to practice. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. You know, I always think of people learning another language, you know, out of two things. One is you grew up in an environment where you had to learn 2-3 languages, like my mm-hmm. colleagues from Europe, for instance, say it's very unrealistic to think that somebody in Europe will only speak one language. Most people in Europe probably speak at least 2 languages, maybe 3. I know some of my colleagues, they speak like 5-6 languages, depends on region they come from. Now, where I wanted to share this anecdote the other day. And now I've had the opportunity to do it. There was a company was interested. I do fractional go-to-market business, like CRO work. So if somebody wants to, you know, help in their revenue generation or take a look at their sales team, take a look at their sales processes, they hire me for that. So one company was interested in doing business with me. They went through a third party, which is located here in Canada.
Okay.
But the original company is located in Toulouse in France. And so they wanted to test, after they got my credential, etc., one more thing. What is it? The guy asked, he said, we want to test his French. So they got me on the phone and they want to have a conversation with me in French. And I was so happy because I got a lot of friends in France and I love to get on the phone with them and talk French, like from France with them, because North American French, with all my due respect to my colleagues in Quebec, is different.
Yeah.
For sure. And I know they tease me sometimes. They say, hey, Robin, you're turning to a French French from Quebec. I say, why? They say, well, when you say, instead of saying we, you're saying why. you're drawing there's a drawl in your, like, you're in Austin. Yes. So there's a drawl in the way you pronounce things. Right. And it sort of like sticks with them. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I ended up doing well with that French conversation. And the guy says, there's nothing wrong with your French.
Yes. No, that's great. That's amazing. I love that story. You know what else I hear? And I see that all the time. Like, for example, Parisian French versus South of France French. For example, in Paris, when they say, let's say, un film, they say, bonbon, un film. And for the longest time, I was bothered by that, you know, because I was like, where do you guys get this from? It's
not in the language. I don't know where this came from.
And even when, you know, there's this duo on Instagram, they have 1 million followers and they keep telling them, oh, it's up. I'm like, no, you're teaching people the wrong thing. And they interviewed President Macron one day and they asked him to say, you know, the wall in French. And he said, un mur. And I said, yeah, exactly. It's un mur.
Listen to the president, for God's sake.
It's exactly. Okay, but all this to say that even in France, you know, there's that different accents and pronunciations. Yeah.
So what is the biggest misconception you think some of your clients, they come into the program and they say they had this idea in their head and then you have to take it and you say, oh, no, this is not what it is for. So basically, who is this for or who is it not for? And what type of individual, person, situation where this is not the right fit?
Yes, great question. So this is for busy professionals, people who have a high stakes situation. You know, like they have a business deal coming up in 90 days or more. They, for example, I coach a fashion executive because last year she felt tossed to the side because she wasn't comprehending what was happening behind the scenes. And in the fashion world, when there's a fashion trend, you have big personalities like the chief editor in Vogue, you know, Anna Wintour sitting in the audience, people don't have time to translate for you. And so she came to me, you know, she got the proper coaching and she was able to, you know, maintain her influence and the respect that she gains in English markets. So some people with high stakes situations, people who want to travel, you know, to France just for fun, you won't like my program because it's quite intensive. So for those people, Duolingo is definitely for you. Rosetta Stone is definitely for you, you know, especially the gaming aspect of Duolingo. It hooks you in. So that's fun. You know, you should do that. But let's say you have, you're expanding your business in a Francophone market. You have a, I don't know, 12 million, 45 million deal that you cannot pass up on, that you cannot fail, right? And you need your French to be up to par. My program is for you. Let's say you have there's a financial aspect to it where if you don't close this deal, you won't be able to send your daughter to Harvard, for example. That's a high stakes situation for you. There's a, you know, your identity also is attached to it. So anything that has your identity attached to it, you come to me and I'll get you to convert, to translate your identity from English to French so you can remain successful in that environment. So that's who this is for. Yeah, that's who this is for. Anybody else who's just, you know, want to do French as a hobby, just for fun, just because they like the language, you know, I would love to coach you, but that's not where my passion lies. Yeah.
You know, very interesting because, you know, our audience is in the localization industry. At least, you know, big part of them are from the localization industry, not exclusively. And, you know, that's their job. That's what they do. They take content and make it feel like it's native content, not translated content. Mm-hmm. And you talk about localizing identity here and narrative of a person, which is, yeah, you know, now we're moved from written or produced material, video, audio, etc., to a person, to a, yeah, how the person feels. Because that's, remember the story about the elevator thing? I really like that. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to feel what the other demographics or the other cultures are feeling.
That's right.
And then, you know, I remember this movie a long time ago. It's an old movie where a pilot was trying to fly a fighter jet. And there's the helmet that they put on to fly the plane. It need to read the thought of the individual in order for the plane to operate. So the person who's flying the jet was English speaking, and the jet was made in Russia, so they it understands the thought of your individual has to be in Russian. So, and he's on the phone, he's on the comm talking to people, I can't fly this thing. And then somebody told him, think in Russian in order for you to fly the jet.
Yes, I love this because it's the same concept with my coaching, Robin. If you, because a lot of times people would come to me and say, Rachel, I can understand the language, but when it's my turn to speak, I freeze. And that's because you're thinking in English. If you're thinking in English, by the time you're done doing the translation in your head, the room has already moved on. The conversation has already moved on. You're left behind. You didn't catch the joke. And that's exactly why you freeze, because you're busy doing a translation in your head. And sometimes it's not even accurate because not everything translates to French, you know, verbatim. And so you have to start thinking in French, which is the purpose of the immersion method. That's why I start with immersion, you know, in the first month. And there's also this misconception that you have to be in France to be immersed. Absolutely not, you know, because remember, my dad immersed me in English in while I was in Haiti, right? And a year later, hey, if I couldn't speak or understand English properly, there's no way I could have been, you know, I could have graduated in computer engineering, which is like a very demanding field to begin with. And so, yes, if you're, you have to think like them, you have to think in the new language, in that culture, in order to be understood, in order to be on the same page, in order to effectively communicate. I love that because, you know what? I'm going to add that to my verbiage from now on. I'm going to say, in order to take off, you need to think in French, in order to take off in French. I love that. I love that.
By the way, if you want to, for the audience, if you want to know the reference movie, I just looked it up because I didn't think about the movie when I was given the anecdote, but the movie is called Firefox. It was produced in 1982. And the main actor is Clint Eastwood. Look it up. He was trying to steal a plane from Russian territory somewhere in the movie. And in order for him to fly the plane, he had to think in Russian. So he put the helmet on in one scene. He can't fly the plane until he thinks in Russian.
Firefox, yes. You know, I remember my dad watching this movie when I was a little girl. I wasn't even born yet.
It's an old movie, yeah.
I wasn't even born yet, but I remember my dad watching it years later. Oh, I have to watch it. Thank you. I love Clint Eastwood. Yes, he's a genius. But, oh man, I love this analogy. I love it.
You know, I remember when I was learning a language, somebody told me, and I don't know how you feel about this, don't be afraid or don't feel like when you say something wrong, don't feel embarrassed. Continue trying.
Yeah.
And I remember this anecdote for me, and I was just learning English. I swear to you, I was just like brand new. I'm a computer programmer. I studied the same degree you did, but I did it in French. Okay. And I come to Canada and I'm working at an insurance company. I'm writing programs. Now I have to send a memo with the program when I put it out, telling the users how to use the programs. That's like early 90s, 1991, I think. And so I couldn't write in English. And my, you know, God bless them, like my colleagues used to sit with me and teach me how to write it in English. Okay. So that's how I learned it. But one time I had a cold, I remember. And that's a very embarrassing moment. I never told this to anybody. I had a cold, maybe like first year in Canada. And I wanted to tell my supervisor, you know, you have your cubicles and you stand up and I want to walk away to go to the pharmacy to grab some medicine. And I said, I'm going to the pharmacy. I want to buy coughing medicine instead of saying cough medicine. I said, I want to say coughing medicine. And I looked around and everybody's laughing at me. So what the heck did I say?
Did you hear coughing medicine?
Yeah. Instead of saying cough medicine, I said coughing medicine. So medicine to induce coughing versus stop coughing.
Got it.
I'll never forget that. That was like 36 years ago. I still remember that.
Yeah. You know, it is so important. You know, we do become self-conscious, and that's a reason why a lot of people give up, because they're afraid to make mistakes. They're afraid to be ridiculed. But let me tell you something. The polyglots, those of us who speak multiple languages, will never make fun of you just, you know, to embarrass you. We actually, especially in Francophones, we appreciate someone making the effort because we know French is a hard language to learn. And so, especially in the business environment, like if you're at a meeting, for example, you're closing a deal and you make a mistake, I promise you, they're not going to laugh at you, okay? They may tease you afterwards. They may tease you or they may correct you. They may not just say, hey, by the way, that word, it's said this way, not that way. You know, they may pull you aside to do that. But Yes, I love to encourage my clients and the people who are listening to not be afraid to make mistakes. We all have been there, you know, it's not your native language, so it is expected, you know, but that's how you grow. You push through the discomfort, you push through the cringe, and then you become better at it, right? So yes, don't be, because, and also if the Ekada CEO had pushed through his discomfort, he probably would not be in this situation. It's okay to make mistakes, to be uncomfortable until you become comfortable. Yeah.
And there is a cost, Rachel, agree with me. There is a cost for all of us if we go quiet. If we don't take the step forward and engage in a conversation, even though it's uncomfortable and I'm not in a language that I'm comfortable with.
Yeah.
There is a cost of not saying anything. There's a cost of just being quiet.
Yes, absolutely. There's a greater cost to staying quiet because as a leader, especially an influential leader, you cannot afford to stay quiet. You know, people need your guidance, your leadership. And so who cares if you make mistakes, as long as they understand your point of view, especially if you have a direction to communicate for your business, for a product line, for a strategy, you cannot afford to stay quiet. Okay. That's, you know, yeah.
And Rachel, where do you stand on if somebody is like learning a language, do you see a problem with somebody saying, hey, if somebody is talking to them in another language, in this case, French, for instance, to stop and say, hey, listen, I didn't understand. Can you repeat or can you explain? Is that doable? Is that okay?
That is encouraged, Robin. Yes. I would rather you say, hey, I didn't catch that. Would you mind repeating slower? Rather than say, hey, can we switch to English? No. Especially if you've already been practicing, especially if you're doing a great job of expressing yourself in the language already. If they say something that you don't understand, I encourage you. You will earn so much respect by asking, could you repeat that again, please? Or could you repeat that? Could you say that differently? Because we say it even in our native language. If we don't understand something, we say, hey, can you say that differently? Because it didn't quite land. So it's okay to say that, you know, in a second language, in a different language, hey, could you repeat that slower? I didn't quite catch that. And also, if you're still not getting it, you could say something like, okay, so what I heard you say is blah, blah, blah. Is that accurate? Is that correct? Right? So please, please do get clarity rather than going back to your comfort mode, which is English. No, don't do that. If you've already made progress in the language, build on that progress, build on that momentum by asking for clarification. Yes.
No, 100%. I really appreciate what you're just saying. And in fact, I can't remember the year now, 2009 or 2010. I can't remember what year was it. I had to fly to Paris to give a presentation in French to a large pharmaceutical company without naming anybody. And I've been in Canada for 10 years. I haven't practiced my French for a while. Now I have a slide deck is in French. I'm going to be speaking pharmaceutical. It's a very heavy topic.
Sure.
And I go in and I do the presentation and sort of like, you know, like the first couple of sentences, it comes out like struggling with it a little bit because I got to re-engage my sub memory, I guess.
Yes.
And vocabulary has to come back out.
Yeah.
But then it just flows. Okay. Normal. And now to be honest with you, you bring up a valid point is that whole practice thing.
Yes.
You know, if you don't practice language, you know, it's not disappears. It just sits in your subconscious somewhere, but it has to be re-engaged again.
Exactly. It stays dormant if you don't practice. So it has to be re-engaged 100%. Yeah, that's why I encourage to just push through, you know, don't revert back to, you know, what's comfortable. Way. Yeah.
Yeah. So have you seen this shift with some of your customers? Do you have like a success story with some of your...
I do. I have a couple of success stories. One of my favorites is, so I was in Paris back in 2018 and I was so excited because I hadn't spoken French in years. And, you know, I'd taken a sabbatical from JP Morgan Chase. I said, you know what? I miss speaking French. I'm going to France. And I'm sitting in Paris. I'm chatting with locals. And they had asked me, where are you from, Rachel? And I said, New York, because at that time I had already spent 20 plus years in New York, right? So I was more of a New Yorker than I was, you know, a Haitian at that time. And so they asked me and I said, oh, I'm from New York. And so after speaking for a bit, one of them stopped and said, wait, Rachel, don't tell us that you're from New York because I'm not going to accept that an American speaks French better than us. Your French is better than most Parisians I know. So I'm not going to accept that you're from New York. Where are you really from? And I felt, you know, such pride, you know, when I heard this and I said, well, you know, I was born and raised in Haiti, but I have spent 20 years in New York. So it wasn't a lie. But yes, I was born and raised in Haiti. And this stranger walks over to our table and said, listen, I didn't mean to pry. or to eavesdrop, but I overheard the conversation and I was wondering if you could coach me because I have this massive deal coming up and I have a feeling I'm going to lose the deal if I cannot connect with my counterparts in French. And that was the first time that I've been approached by a stranger. Typically people in my circles, you know, in corporate approach me. I said, I mean, do you have a business card? Yeah, sure, I'll consider it. And then later on, you know, it was like a month and a half in of coaching him, I realized this guy's actually a billionaire. And I didn't even know that. And I told him, why didn't you tell me? He's like, that's not something I flaunt, you know, but to watch him, and he also speaks fluent Japanese. So that language is hard. So to go from English to Japanese, that was hard. And now he's, you know, to French. And to watch him evolve and actually understand the cultural nuances in French. And even during our training, he'll start a conversation with, you know, bonjour Rachel, vous avez passé un bon weekend. Just understanding that, you know, differently than some Asian cultures, go straight to the point, you know, no time for platitudes is what they call it. In the French culture, it's different. You have to bond. They want to connect with the person they're doing business with. Sometimes it takes, it requires a walk by the Seine River or a drink, right? And just to see that shift. And then after he graduated, a few months later, he called me to thank me because he was able to successfully close that deal that, you know, people were impressed. They asked him, where did you learn this way? Because, you know, your French isn't Parisian French. And then he said, yeah, I told him, no, my coach told me she wasn't going to teach me Parisian French because that's not the proper French. And, you know, that just brought me so much joy. Another success story was the fashion executive, you know, who went from being feeling tossed aside to now commanding the room and driving the conversation. No, those just to see the impact, you know, that I can make and provide, contribute to other people's lives this way. It just brings me so much joy.
Hey, Rachel, have you thought about expanding this to other languages through partnership with others?
You know, a couple of people have asked me this question. Not yet. I want to master this first because, it's only been 6 months since I formally launched. So I want to ace it with French and then potentially expand it, you know. Yeah, because a couple of people have asked me about Spanish. And I do speak, you know, Spanish, but French is my passion. So I'm doing French now and then potentially expand. Actually, one person asked me about Russian. So I would definitely have to partner with someone and actually do know someone who may be interested. So there's room there. There's room for future partnerships, but just not now. Yeah.
We're coming to the, you know, the wrap up segment of our conversation here. You know, talking to you, I don't realize the time. We've been recording for almost an hour.
I
just feel like this conversation is so fluid.
Yeah.
If someone is listening right now and has one French speaking meeting coming up next month, etc., and zero time to prepare, what is the one thing that you want them to do right now?
I want you to you can reach out to me. I will give you some key words that will help you drive the conversation in French. Because yes, if you press for time, you just need to know some key business requirements, business settings, some key authority words, you know, sentences, not just words, some sentences that allow you to maintain your presence, stay in the room, stay engaged. And even drive the conversation, you know, at some points, even if you don't get the whole conversation. So I actually do have you can go on my website, parlermethod.com. I actually do have a small brief that contains some of those sentences, business sentences that can help you, you know, follow the conversation and stay present in the conversation. That's what I would recommend. If you don't have time to do any sort of immersion or anything like that, you can, you know, go to parlermethod.com and find the brief, or you can reach out to me. You know, you can contact me from the website or on LinkedIn, Rachel Pierre, and I'll be happy to send that over to you. Yeah.
And absolutely. And if some of the listeners are interested in this conversation, wants to find out more, you can't get a hold of Rachel, just send me a little message. I'll introduce you to Rachel, no problem. Her and I are connected on LinkedIn. I'll facilitate an introduction. That's what we do on this channel, and making sure that people are connected together. I've got an interesting small question for you, if you don't mind, Rachel. What is a word or phrase in French that took you the longest to feel that is truly yours, like belongs to you, even though you grew up speaking it? Was there like a specific word that you thought, I'm struggling with this, it doesn't belong to me?
A French word? I can't think of a French word. And I think it's because growing up, I had to speak like spotless French, you know, especially because of the world that my dad was in, you know, being a lawyer, DA, et cetera. And when we attended events, we know our French had to be, you know, spotless, spot on. So my dad actually taught me how to guess the spelling of a word, you know, the etymology of a word. Even if I'd never heard it before, you can guess the etymology, you know, most likely from Latin. And so from that etymology, you can guess what it means and you can actually guess the right spelling of the word. And so because he gave me those tools to actually navigate the language, which is a difficult language, but beautiful. I can honestly say right now, you know, on the spot, I can't think of a word.
Nah, that's fine. That's okay. I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but I thought it would be interesting if there was, you know, something that you probably culturally did not belong to me, but I learned it, whatever. And that's, I know, I realize we're on a microphone right now. It doesn't come back to you. Later on, you probably send me a message on that one. I know.
Yes, everyone, I can probably send you a message on, yeah. But on the flip side, I know that, you know, what I do experience is when the French words are deformed in the American language, like déjà vu, and then people would try to correct me and say, so when I say déjà vu, and they'd be like, what? No, it's déjà vu. And man,
yeah.
It's like, you don't want to get that side of me. Don't correct me on another language. No.
Yeah. You mean instead of Monique, there'll be Monique? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah. Don't get me started on that. Or lingerie instead of lingerie. I mean, that one took me for a loop. I was like, but where do you get that pronunciation lingerie? How exactly does that spelling?
Yeah. How did you compile that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, that was fun. I really love this conversation. That's cool.
Me too. This was really fun.
I want to thank you for joining me. I really appreciate it, Rachel. Any last comments before we wrap it up?
Yeah. So I would say that for your listeners, I just wanted to remind them that sometimes executive presence is certainly not about title. I'm sure, you know, most of your listeners already know that maintaining executive presence is certainly not about, you know, your title, but it's mostly about influence, right? From leadership. And so that's just something that I have to remind myself of quite often. So when I say executive presence, I teach you know how to maintain your executive presence. Yeah, it's not so much, I don't really mean like your title. I mean your authority. I mean your influence. I mean your accomplishments, you know, how you show up in rooms and how I help you, you know, translate that, you know, from English to French. And, you know, don't forget that there are people looking up to you out there, you know, on how you maintain that authority and influence. One of my favorite leaders, I love that even when he communicates his objection to me, instead of saying, Rachel, that's a bad idea, he would go, Rachel, I'm concerned that. And just by that shift alone, I mean, I have so much respect for him for doing that, because he could have easily just said, bad idea, because of who he is, you know, and that's a leader at Apple. I won't say his name, but because of who he is, he could have easily dismissed me, but he didn't. His emotional intelligence left a huge impression on me. And so that's the word that I want to leave your audience with today, just to remind yourself that there are people looking up to you, people that you're inspiring, and you know, just to watch how you speak to them, how you inspire them. And that's what executive presence truly mean, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I want to thank you, Rachel, for joining me today. I really appreciate your time. And for the audience, I hope you enjoyed this podcast. Rachel and I, we had a few laughs. We've exchanged notes and exchanged ideas.
Yeah.
We've hopefully educated you a little bit. Hopefully we gave you some information you did not have before. And I really want to thank you so much for engaging with this content, for engaging with this channel. If you're watching us on YouTube, thanks for watching. And if you're listening to us on the audio channels, thanks for listening to the podcast. And also, if you're checking out the blog post where I summarize these conversations into an archivable form at robinayoub.blog, thank you so much for engaging with this. And by the way, hopefully I get this done in the next few days. There'll be a new app launched for the channel where you can download the app and all the content will be at your fingertips on your mobile, where you can, you know, look for videos, look for audio, read the texts that we publish. It'd be a single place where all of the content will be aggregated. So, and it's searchable too. So you can search for your favorite guest and listen to their podcast or listen to or read their blogs that we've written about them. So I want to thank everybody for joining me today, episode 241, that comes to a wrap. And I will see you guys at the next episode. Thanks, everybody. Bye now.